revving up the lean braise. Fasten your seatbelts and hold on to your carrots, comrades. We're going to burn some high-performance health rubber. You're about to enter the lean braise throwdown zone, accelerating for the simple solutions. We are avengers of health. Hide the donuts. You're listening to the Lean Braise Radio Show at theleanbraise.com. Welcome, Braze. I'm Ron Jones. I've got Chuck Giles here in Tucson, Arizona, and Marlee Bisbee. And we're all Lean Braze. And we're going to talk about active aging with Chuck, who's been doing a lot of activity, not just since he turned 70 last year, but I guess for quite a few decades.
Since birth, I think.
So one of the things, if you've been following us a little bit here at the Lean Braze, that you know we try to find people that have inspiring stories, and they can be from all walks of life, all ages, all levels of ability. And Chuck has done some pretty amazing things on a bicycle, crossing a few continents. So Marlee Bisbee has been a crew member for him when he rode across the whole United States last summer, right?
That's correct.
And that was a six-week journey?
I think so, just maybe yeah. 40, 41 days
okay.
of actual riding.
Right, and didn't you take some friends along with you? And
yeah, there were some other fools that helped me on that one.
Were they your age or younger or older?
All younger.
Okay, did they keep up?
Yeah, sometimes they were ahead.
Okay, that's all right. But y'all made it to the other side.
Well, two of my friends I had done other things with, and they're from Scotland.
Okay.
And they had to return home about 10 days before we finished.
Okay.
But they went most of the way.
So they came along, is it kind of moral support to help you and give you somebody to talk to a little bit?
Yeah, and they have a love for doing that kind of thing, and that I'm sure was a big part of it.
Okay, cool. And you were the...
I was the crew.
You were the crew?
I was the crew.
All right.
So I drove the van and made sure that everybody got their drinks and their food and their hotel and their luggage and all that good stuff.
She almost always kept it on the road, too.
Did you crash? All right. So do you do anything else besides cycling or...?
Yes, I'm a lawyer and still practice.
Okay. And is cycling your main activity then?
Well, until very recently, I also did some running, but cycling's always been, not always, since I was about 40, it's been the main thing I've done.
Okay. And then have you been, even in high school and through college, through early adulthood, you've stayed pretty active the whole time then?
I played more the traditional sports in those years. I played baseball, I played football, ran track, those kind of things.
Okay.
Played tennis.
So what's interesting, you know, we have a lot of people in this country that are overweight and out of shape. And what we say is most of the people are overweight or out of shape or both, you know. And there are many people, I'm a corporate wellness coach by profession, so I deal with people all the time that they're not doing anything, or they look at me and they say, well, I'm 40, and of course I'm 51. I'm looking at them, it's like, yeah, you know. How have you been able to stay active so consistently so long? What drives you, what motivates you, what inspires you to do that? And I'm hoping that people listening can get something out of that maybe that will spark them.
Well, first of all, I enjoy physical activity. Mm-hmm. To me, it's not a chore. It's something I look forward to doing.
Uh-huh.
And I think, unfortunately, a lot of people, when they reach a certain age, and it's usually a fairly young one,
right,
become sedentary instead of active. And it becomes, the longer you are in that mode, the harder it is to do anything else, in my view.
Right.
My own, I mean, if I have a problem, for example, I had my knee scoped about 2 months ago.
Mm-hmm.
I took one day off and was on the bike the next day.
Really?
Wow. Yeah. I know that if you don't do that, it becomes harder and harder.
Sure.
As each day passes.
Especially, we're all over 50 here today, so, you know, it doesn't get any easier as you get older, and that regular activity is really important.
To me, it's very important.
Right.
In fact, I think another part of the equation is that instead of just doing it when you have the opportunity, you actually have to plan to do it. It has to be a planned part of your day.
Okay, and that's important from a behavioral standpoint. When I'm coaching with people, sometimes it becomes basically about that. They just haven't slotted it in, or they haven't purchased the right food, and then work starts Monday, and now they don't have what they need, and then they're back at the fast food place. And so, well, you said you actually look forward to it and enjoy it, and some people don't, but you like to get out on the bike, and you like to train. How many miles do you ride a week?
Oh, if I'm not preparing for something, just a normal week, mm-hmm. somewhere in the area of 200 miles a week.
Then that's a normal week.
That's
just a maintenance week.
Right. Before I had my knee scoped recently, I used to run probably another hour and a half to 2 hours a week.
Wow.
Not at a very high level.
Right, right.
I was out there.
You're getting down the road.
Right.
Okay. Is the knee the first injury you've had, or have you been pretty healthy the whole time?
It's the last injury I've had.
The last injury?
there have been many.
Well, you know what I tell people? It's probably a lot healthier than sitting on the couch.
Absolutely, because what I haven't had is I haven't had a stroke. I haven't had a heart attack.
Right.
I haven't had any of those type of things that are generally associated with sedentary life.
Mm-hmm.
And you're not on any meds either.
I take no medicine at all.
You know, my great grandmother's in her 80s. She doesn't take any medications. Yeah. And, you know, the average in America is a prescription per decade.
Wow.
So Marlee and I should be on 5 meds. You know, we're in our 50s. So pretty surprising when you look at the young people today and how they're being over-medicated because of obesity and things like that.
Unfortunately, episodically, I do have to take allergy meds. But
right.
That's, to me, a different situation.
Sure, yeah. Absolutely.
It's not like those lifestyle meds,
right?
Mm-hmm. High blood pressure, high cholesterol.
So let's dig a little bit more into the specifics of what you've done on a bicycle across the continents, because, you know, probably most of the corporate people I deal with are over 45, and it can be difficult just to get some of them out and go for a walk around the block. But at your age, you have ridden your bike, how many continents? 5 continents.
6.
6 continents.
The
across
only one
six
I seven. Haven't done is Antarctica, and I don't consider that possible.
So what inspired you or drove you to attempt something like that?
Well, when I was younger and doing the other type of sports I've indicated,
uh-huh.
it worked better with where I was in life. I had kids and
uh-huh.
more responsibilities and a job that really required me to spend a significant amount of time.
Sure.
But when I hit 50, some of those things sort of disappeared, and it allowed me to be able to do some of the other things. And frankly, the spirit of adventure had a lot to do with it. I happened to read about a guy who I thought was crazy. It turned out he was. And he put together a bike race
uh-huh.
from the westernmost point to the easternmost point of Australia. And I read about it somewhere and thought, that sounds like something I need to do.
Wow.
And that's really what got me started into this continent thing.
Okay. And that was the first continent you did?
Yeah, it was Australia, and I did it when I was 52 years old.
Wow. And that's probably rather warm.
It was everything. It
yeah.
was warm, it was wet, it was humid, it was dry, it was really out there. You don't think of it that way because some of the other continents sound more remote
right.
when you think about them, but Australia was by far the most remote. We were in the most remote places I've ever been in my life.
Really? And you did that alone, but you had a crew?
No, just the opposite. We had just over 30 people raced it, and they provided a truck and a bus. They had food. They carried your tent from day to day, that kind of thing.
Okay, so you actually did the event you were talking about.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, okay. I thought it had happened, then you just decided to ride later after they...
No, actually...
You did the... And that was the one, Marlee, you said they've only done once because it was so crazy.
Yeah, it's not... To my knowledge, that race has never been done yeah. again.
Hmm.
Yeah.
And you've done a lot of crewing for the Race Across America as well.
I've done that. I've also crewed the Badwater Ultra Marathon a number of times.
Ah, yeah, I'll be out there this summer. Yeah, I'll be out there helping Chris.
Take your wide-brimmed hat.
Yes, I found that out when I did it the first time. Yeah.
It's an interesting event. The So is RAM, of course, the Race Across America, which,
sure,
as you say, I have crewed 7 times.
Wow. That's nice that you've been on both sides of the bike.
Yeah. You know? Yeah, it makes it interesting because I know by doing the crewing, you learn what you need to do when you're doing it on the bike or
right.
on foot or however you're doing it.
Yeah.
And so it makes a big difference having that knowledge.
Yeah, I think it makes you a better rider. I mean, for me, I was able to appreciate the crew more. When I was the crew chief for Team Brazil, I raced the team event in RAM twice and thought I knew what it was all about. And then I did the crew, and then I started to figure it out.
Yeah, exactly.
That's where the real work was.
And it's kind of interesting because I don't think I ever would have done RAM if I hadn't crewed RAM first 3 times.
Hmm.
And then I knew what to expect.
Yeah.
And that made it possible for me to then go and race RAM.
Yeah, so, I didn't know what I was getting into.
And having crewed RAM, I knew I could never do it. So,
well, I knew I could never do it solo.
Yeah. Right? I don't know how you guys do the solo stuff. That's just wild. So you did Australia, and what was the next one that you did? And how many years later?
Actually, there was a long lag.
Okay.
I did Australia when I was 52 years old, and when I was, about 62 or 3, I then, again, made the mistake of reading a magazine that said, first ever, we're going to be the first group that's ever put together basically a race
mm-hmm.
from Cairo to Cape Town.
Wow.
And that was the second one I did.
Good thing you did it then and not now.
Yeah.
It'd be a little more difficult, you know?
Although it was pretty interesting when we did it.
Yeah. Interesting. And then what was the next?
After that, if my memory's right, we did this. That, by the way, was with a group that called the Tour d'Afrique. They put that on.
Okay.
Then a couple years later, they did something they called the Orient Express,
mm-hmm.
which was Paris to Istanbul.
Oh, that'd be great.
Yeah, so I did Europe as the third one, I guess.
Hmm. And did you ever have any issues along the way besides just the drama? I mean, in terms of, being a 50-plus athlete, fatigue, injury, any kind of thing like that going on?
In Australia, it was more fatigue issues. It was mm-hmm. very demanding.
Yeah,
we were rarely on roads. We were often in sand that was halfway to your axle.
Oh my God!
And it was a really challenging, difficult event. And the guy who put it on insisted on crossing Australia. I think we did it in something like 27 days, which was better than 100 miles a day.
Which is a lot in sand.
Oh, yeah. And when it wasn't sand, it was really bad.
Right.
We were rarely ever on pavement, let's put it that way. The only thing that saved us was it's pretty flat.
That's amazing.
Oh, it was. We were out there one day. There was a woman who did it who had won RAM. Mm. She's a former RAM winner.
Yeah.
Tried to do this, and it was eating her alive.
Really?
She would start. She would get up before dawn
uh-huh.
and start out. And one day we're riding along, we see her out in front of us pushing uh-huh. her bike. We rode up to her and said, "Well, Elaine, what are you doing?" And she said, "I'm taking my bike for a walk." And there was a lot of that going on out there. But so Australia was very challenging in that regard. Africa had different and very amazing challenges to it.
Did you get chased by any animals?
We saw some, uh-huh. but luckily we never... I mean, there were some baboons that on occasion expressed an unusual amount of interest. But one day we got up in the morning and the guy said to us, our leader said to us, "Try to ride in groups of 2 or 3 today." We asked why, and he said, "Because there have been lions spotted up the road where you're going." But we didn't see any.
Wow.
I was very careful that day to ride with people who were slower than I was.
My gosh. Do you do... when you're not riding your bike, do you do any of the kind of training in terms of conditioning? Because one of the things that people ask me when they, especially when they're over 50 trying to get active, and they're always worried about getting hurt and this and that. And so do you do any strength training or stretching or yoga or anything like that?
Not specifically, but sort of what's happened is I've accumulated injuries. I've developed a workout routine that sort of assists in regard to those injuries. Mm-hmm. So I do about a half an hour a day of this and that that deals with the problems I've encountered through the course of my life.
Yeah. I do a lot of corrective stuff now, too. Yeah. You know, with biofoam roller or, you know, different types of stretching and corrective strength training, what have you.
Yeah, I think as you get older, you almost have to do that.
Yeah.
I also think if you've had an injury or surgery where you've been required to do physical therapy, it's always a good idea to continue with that physical therapy forever. I think it's a good idea to do that. They set you up for rehabilitation, and if you can do that, you're less likely to re-injure yourself.
Mm-hmm.
Well, so that's been one of the things that I do. Is
yeah, and the other thing is I think that at least since I've been 50, I've never had an injury that actually went away. I mean, they all revisit you frequently.
Mm-hmm. That's another thing. And I've talked to people about this at work. You know, things happen, and we just have to learn how to flow through that instead of just quitting, you know, because people get into a level of difficulty or they're uncomfortable, and then they're just... they're gone. You know, they think they exercise a month or two in a row and then they have enough stored in the health bank account to take a year off or something, you know. But that hasn't been the case with you. You've managed to flow through that. And
oh yeah, I've had a number of injuries, and I've always insisted that as soon as I could do something, I did it again, because I knew it would get too easy to become a channel changer as opposed to an active person. So,
yeah,
you know, I've broken both collarbones. I've torn all the tendons and ligaments in both of my shoulders.
Mm-hmm. Bike crash stuff?
Most of it, yes.
Yeah.
I've broken three vertebrae. I've got two bulging discs. I've had both knees scoped. Mm-hmm. But, you know, they don't all happen at the same time.
Right, right.
And you deal with them one at a time and work through them. And that's most of these exercises I'm talking about deal with those kind of issues.
Okay. Yeah. Crewing for Chuck and him being 70, I mean, what are your reflections? And you've seen a lot of, you know, 50 plus athletes. I mean, and for those of you that don't know, Marlisa, I consider you to be one of the best sport massage therapists in the country.
Thank you, Ron.
Yeah.
Well, I'd like to back up just a little bit and let Chuck talk about his other continents, because he's not through.
That's right. We have more.
and then I'll talk about the last one that he did.
Okay. So after Africa?
Well, we didn't talk much about Africa, and I really should mention it, because as I don't know exactly the right word to use to describe that adventure, romantic or whatever, but it was really an amazing thing to do.
Yeah.
Not just riding 12,000 miles or whatever we rode. I think it was 12,000 kilometers, actually.
Mm-hmm.
But the place itself is just truly amazing.
Mm-hmm.
And we weren't going through the major parts of the continent. We were in some pretty remote areas. And it was really amazing to have that opportunity to go out and do those things.
That reminds me of something that I've told people, and a big concern of mine for the younger people is that a lot of the life experiences that I've had and the character building that I've done have been through my fitness activities, the people I've met like Marley, like you. And I've done some work with child obesity prevention and child obesity, and a lot of those kids will never have the opportunity to have those types of experiences that are so enriching.
Yeah, it would be almost impossible to make that bike trip through Africa and be obese.
Yeah.
At least at the end.
might be a good obesity prevention or reversal program, right?
We actually started that trip at the Sphinx. So that was our kickoff place.
Yeah.
And we went from there, and through Ethiopia is one of the countries we went through. When we got to...
Not a lot of obese people in Ethiopia.
No, there were very few.
Yeah.
And as a side trip, we went to a place called Lalibela, which is an incredible place to see if you ever have the opportunity. And when we got there, just for fun, three of us weighed ourselves. We were waiting for a plane, actually, a small plane to get us out of there.
Right.
And we had lost, two of us had lost 24 pounds,
Wow.
And the other had lost 25.
Really?
And Marley can tell you, one of them is not a skinny guy. It was Mike. And he's not a skinny guy, but he had lost 25 pounds in about 6 weeks. So
riding your bike all day can do that.
Yeah, and being limited in what you can eat, too.
Right. Yeah, it's not like you can go to the 7-Eleven on the corner there. And
no, there weren't too many chocolate shakes out there.
Wow. What did you eat going across remote areas like that?
Whatever was available.
Really?
Local things.
Local things. Huh?
Right. Hmm. Which varied significantly.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, there did seem to be mostly you could get baked goods, bread, things like that.
Uh-huh.
But beyond that, it could be anything.
Do you have any illness issues with that, eating the different types of food and drinking different things?
We crossed from Sudan into Ethiopia.
Uh-huh.
And when we got there, we were in a small village. It had a nice restaurant. And everybody had this kid go buy us all this food.
Right.
About 6 hours later, we were in deep trouble.
Really?
Yeah. And that happened more than once on that trip.
Oh, wow. You stayed in the saddle and you kept moving along.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, you were asking about injuries. The second day out there, I got hit by a car.
Really?
And it tore all the tendons and ligaments in my right shoulder. I had to take a couple days off.
Wow, yeah.
And before I could ride again. But, yeah, you're back on the bike and you're riding through horrible conditions, so you're falling off the bike a lot.
Oh, my gosh.
Doing your best to fall on the other side of your body from where you were hurt. But, it's amazing what you can do if you put yourself out there and try.
Yeah, I mean, and I hope people get that listening today. They need to make an effort. They're capable of doing a lot more than they probably ever imagined. Marlene and I were talking about this last night about the RAM, you know, doing those types of things. You get to a certain spot where, you know, you go to the other side.
Yeah, and the other thing about that is that sometimes it's situational. Mm-hmm. I mean, in your normal life, you probably can't do those things.
Exactly.
But when you're out there, you can.
Right. And you have to give it a shot, you know?
Yeah, and when you succeed, there's certainly a sense of accomplishment, and it's almost always worth the adventure.
Oh, yeah. It's not something you buy. It's something you earn.
Exactly.
And that's another thing, I think, with a lot of the younger people, it's a materialistic kind of gratification thing. And so much of what we do doesn't have anything to do with that. You know, it's just the sweat part of it. You know, the uncomfortable difficulty, you know. I've taken some kids up the top of Yosemite Falls. There's no tram up there. You have to hike or walk, you know, and it's just a breathtaking, life-changing view, but you have to work for it. And I just hope more kids will get back in shape and have that opportunity. Maybe they won't ride across Africa, but they might be able to go up to a hike and have a nice vista, you know.
Well, and when we got done in Africa, we ended at Cape Town.
Uh-huh.
There's an incredible edifice in the middle of Cape Town called Table Mountain.
Mm-hmm.
The town sort of surrounds it. You go up to the top of it, and you get these magnificent views off the top of it.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I hadn't walked, really, or run in 4 months when I went up Table Mountain. We'd been on the bike the whole time.
Right.
By the time I got down Table Mountain, I could hardly walk at all. It just...
Wow.
Because it was about a five-hour hike coming off that mountain, and not having done anything like that.
Sure, yeah.
It was like I was walking backwards for a couple days. But the opportunity to see that and be there was mm-hmm. well worth all the pain.
Mm-hmm. That's cool.
And when we did Europe, Paris to Istanbul is an interesting route because you start in, you know, a very sophisticated area with modern things.
Mm-hmm.
And then you end up going through places like Bulgaria, Romania,
mm-hmm.
and the very western part of Turkey.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a whole different world there.
Yeah. I've always wanted to visit Istanbul. Yeah.
I would put it in my top five.
Really?
Top five cities I've ever visited.
Wow.
It's a really, really special place.
Mm-hmm.
For one thing, it's half in Europe and half in Asia.
Right.
And the Bosporus, which separates the two, is a remarkable waterway. It's not just like a river. It's
mm-hmm.
it's different than that. And the energy that's in Istanbul and the diversity,
mm-hmm.
you can. There's a place in the thing called the Sultanahmet, which is the old, old part of the city,
mm-hmm.
where if you sat there with a bag of golf balls and about a 6-iron, you could hit a golf ball to all the remarkable things that there are there.
Wow.
Like the Sultan, well, the Sultanahmet's the name of the area, but you've got the Hagia Sophia, which is a magnificent building, the Blue Mosque,
mm-hmm.
Topkapi Palaces. They're all right there.
Really?
And that you can easily walk from one to the other.
Hmm. And then from, so did we cover all the continents?
Oh, no.
That takes us through Europe. Then 2 years after that, Henry, the guy who puts these together, decided that he had to do Asia. So he did the Silk Route.
Hmm.
We started in Istanbul
mm-hmm.
and ended in Beijing.
Wow.
And went through Central Asia, which you'd think would have a lot of romance to it, like Africa, but the distances were too great between the interesting things.
Hmm.
I mean, you'd be out there for the desert in Turkmenistan makes Tucson, where we are right now, seem like a lush place.
Really?
Yeah.
Wow.
It's just stark desert.
Just nothing.
And it's, every day we were out there, it was well over 100 degrees. And,
wow.
And how long did it take you guys to do Asia, Chuck?
It took us 4 months to do Asia.
4 months. How long did it take you to do Africa?
4 months.
Yeah. Oh, wow. And beat sitting on the couch.
Yeah. there are some remarkable things to see in Central Asia. At Turkmenistan, which I just mentioned, it was the pits to ride through it, but
yeah.
you end up in Ashgabat, which is the capital,
mm-hmm.
and it's one of the most amazing places I've ever been in my life. You're in an area that hasn't changed much in a long, long time.
Right.
But Ashgabat has 6-lane wide paved roads with dividers, marble buildings all over the place.
Wow.
It had a ruler that liked to build edifices, mm-hmm. including those to himself.
Mm-hmm.
So you'd see this city that looked totally out of place.
Mm.
But Ashgabat also on its outskirts had one of the oldest and neatest open-air markets you'd ever see in the world. And it was old, thousand-year-old stalls.
Right, yeah.
Scarfs in one and automobile transmissions in the next.
It'd be so colorful to be there and see that.
Oh, it was incredible.
The spices and all that.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
We spent a whole day wandering through that market in Ashgabat.
Cool.
So, and then, you enter China. We actually walked on the Great Wall at the western end of it.
Mm-hmm.
And then when we got done in Beijing, we went to the eastern end and walked on the wall a ways there too.
Do you have security issues doing all this, or
we never had a problem? I can't think of a time on any of these trips I'm describing
mm-hmm.
where we ever had a true security issue.
Mm-hmm.
There were instances where, for example, in the really devout Muslim countries, where the women who were on the trip wearing bike shorts
mm-hmm.
had some problems.
Right, right, yeah.
There were those kind of issues, mm-hmm. but nothing where you really felt unsafe.
Hmm. And just to refresh people's minds, he's done all this after the age of 50.
Right.
Right.
Yeah, I did the first one at 52.
Wow.
And then after we did Asia, I put together the same two people from Scotland
mm-hmm.
and three friends of mine from here
mm-hmm.
went to Santiago, Chile.
Mm-hmm.
We rode down south in Chile quite a ways, turned east, went across Argentina to the Atlantic. So we crossed the South American continent.
Nice.
And, every place that I've been, there's been something that's spectacular. And
uh-huh.
Chile is one of the few other places I've been where I would live.
Hmm.
It's just a spectacular country.
So you saved the United States for last, huh?
Yeah, I figured I wanted to be somewhere where I could speak the language. Plus, of course, it's the easiest from a logistic perspective.
Right, and you had crewed the Race Across America, too, so you had a kind of an idea of what was going on.
In fact, we stole the Race Across America route for the most part.
Okay.
Not 100%.
Mm-hmm.
So the route that we went on last summer in 2010 for Chuck's North American crossing was the Ram route that you and I had crewed for in 2009.
Okay.
Basically.
And we saw part of it.
We saw part of it. Yes.
That's another story.
It's another story. Definitely. But, one of the things that started happening for me as the crew person with the Kennedys, the couple that came from Scotland, there was another woman who came from Montreal who had done some of these rides, and I think Michael had done most of them with you, right?
I've done four of my six continents with Mike Kennedy, yeah.
And so they came along, and the cool thing about it was that Michael is a gearhead like you are, so he had all these computers with all these slideshows of all these trips, and then all the stories that were reinforced not just by Chuck telling them, but by Michael and Katrina, his wife, and MJ and Marie-José would all tell these stories of these fabulous continental crossings that these people did on their bikes. And I thought what was really wonderful about it was how, you know, to dream big.
Right.
You know, you don't stop. He didn't stop at just one continent. He thought, I'll do another. And then it became this situation where he was going to do as many as he could.
And be sitting on the couch.
And be sitting on the couch. And the thing about Chuck is, it doesn't matter to him how old he is. What matters is that he gets to do his continents.
You know what I think I'm getting out of this, you know, as a corporate wellness person is to speak at a little more personal level with people that I'm working with about the possibilities. Because I've seen that at a smaller level, but gosh, you know, you've done all this after 50. With the hiking and things, I've seen people kind of transform and morph. But, you know, it's just really amazing what people can do when they get to work and they're consistent. I think a big part of you being successful and the things that we've done too, Marley, is that we've been consistent with the preparation.
Well, and you'd be surprised how many people there are out there.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, Mike Kennedy is, I believe, just past his 48th birthday, if my memory's right.
Mm-hmm.
You could sit and talk to him all day, literally, and he would never run out of new things to tell you that he's done.
Wow.
I mean, he's probably up around 100 countries now, and he's done some absolutely incredible things. I mean, he's heli-skied in Kamchatka. It was after our South America trip. He went down somewhere in South America and found a water. He loves waterfalls. He found a waterfall that was totally inaccessible.
Mm-hmm.
He talked some pilot with a baling wire airplane to fly him into the canyon where this waterfall was. I mean, there probably aren't 200 people in the world that have ever seen that thing.
Really?
Wow. So he does things like that. MJ, who she mentioned, has skied from the North Pole back to civilization. She's climbed Choyoyu. She's climbed Kilimanjaro, Aconcagua. She did those 1 month apart.
Mm-hmm.
She's solo biked across Canada.
Now, how old is she?
She turned 50.
Just turned 50.
So she's, you know, 40 plus and doing these things.
Oh, yeah.
That's wonderful.
And I think did most of those things when she was over 40.
Really? Wow.
Right.
Cool.
So, I mean, you know, that when you're out there with people who do those kind of things, it doesn't seem all that remarkable.
But it is.
Yeah, it is special.
And it's made even more remarkable by the fact that they're the age that they are.
Right.
And it doesn't seem to ever end. You know, there's never a point where any of these people, especially not Chuck, I mean, Chuck was the oldest, and he was definitely the person that was the first one out there every morning.
Mm-hmm.
He was definitely the person that, you know, set the pace, and he was definitely the person that was going to see it through to the very end because it was his sixth continent, and it was his 70th year.
Yeah.
And, you know, as a person who's 56, I'm looking at it going, you know, it's really never over. It's really never, ever over. That's the story that I get. That's
the way it should be. It's a shame so many people give up so young. You know?
One of the tricks is to find things you can still do.
Right.
I mean, I can't go out and play baseball anymore.
Sure.
I'm not capable of that.
Right.
But I can still ride my bike.
Right.
I can still walk.
Uh-huh.
And I'm sure I'll be able to run before very long.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, there are always things you can do.
Yeah. We kind of had a chat along these lines last night, Marley, about, you know, as I've gotten older, I keep finding things that I can do that enable me to keep improving. I can do things now that I couldn't do 30 years ago. I'll probably learn something in the next 12 months that I can say this time next year, I can do this now and I couldn't do this last year. Can I ride my bike as fast as in a 40K time trial? I don't know. I don't ride my bike enough. But anymore, maybe not. Yeah. Maybe not right now. You know, but I can still keep learning and keep having different experiences and in many ways keep improving.
Yeah,
you know, and not quitting.
It doesn't mean for we both talked about not riding as much as we used to.
Mm-hmm.
For me, it's about reinventing myself, doing something else.
Right.
You know, if I'm not going to ride, it's not a matter of not doing anything. It's a matter of, well, what are you going to do if you're not going to ride?
And it's not going to be the couch.
And it's not going to be the couch. And, you know, for me, it was hiking this year. So that's what we're doing. That's what brought you guys to Tucson.
Right.
But I wanted to kind of hook all these people in together that I happen to know who are over 70,
mm-hmm.
who are doing remarkable things because they want to.
Right. And so what brought me to Tucson for the Lean Berets this weekend was Marley talking about all these different people that were doing all these different things at this point in their life when so many people don't do anything. And it just seemed like a great story and opportunity to come here and you know, make a few shows and actually go for a hike with some of these people tomorrow and really try to glean something out of that I could, you know, help other people with. So.
And there are a number of people out there. One of the guys who did the Asia trip, who was from Holland, was 3 years older than I am.
Mm-hmm.
And he was out there every day. Nothing stopped him. He's just one of the most tenacious guys I've ever seen.
That's great.
Yeah.
Was he an EFIer?
Very close to it. I don't think he quite made it, but he was very close.
You know, my mom, she hiked up to the top of Yosemite Falls last year, and she's walked, you know, but my parents weren't what I would call, like, hardcore fitness people growing up. They were just, you know, they didn't really do much except walk. But she decided she was going to do it, and she started training up, and she went up to the top, and 69 years old, and she was fine. You know, and it was just really amazing to see, you know, her in a fairly short amount of time decide she was going to do it. And once she decided she was going to do it, she did it. And, you know, there are people half her age that would just sit there and say they couldn't do it.
But you know, Ron, I think one of the other things that people have to consider when they're looking at this kind of thing
mm-hmm.
is if you have been inactive, you don't want to start out trying to run a marathon.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah.
You've got to work up to it slowly because if you don't, you'll only last a week.
Right. And it's a large part of my business, trying to get people, you know, to initiate something and then work their way up and try to be safe with it. But it does start with something, right?
Yeah, and I guess probably it starts with the desire.
Mm-hmm.
What the motivation is can be something totally different.
Mm-hmm. Did you grow up with a fitness-type culture at home? Is that what launched you, or is this something you did independently?
My parents were not very active.
Uh-huh.
My brother has always been very active, and my sister inactive.
Okay.
So it's just...
It's more of an individual thing with you.
Right.
Cool. Anything else to say about the trip, Marley, and just...
Well, I had a wonderful time. And how did you feel, Chuck, when you finished? I mean, it for me, the question I always wanted to ask you was... having ridden across all of the continents except Antarctica, which I understand you don't have a desire to ride across. We won't hold that against you
at all.
Okay,
thank you.
Penal frostbite is not probably something to experience, you know.
You know, my question would be, what's next? What's next for you?
You know, I thought the same thing for a while after I did it, and I wasn't coming up with good answers. But... this guy that does the Tour d'Afrique stuff
mm-hmm.
put together a trip this year. They're there right now. They're just finishing
mm-hmm.
Through most of India.
Mm.
And some of the issues that came up in Ethiopia when we were going across Africa, I know would exist in India, and it sort of sours me on the thought of doing it mm-hmm. because the people were always in Ethiopia very close to you. You couldn't have individual space. And I know the same is true to some degree in India.
Mm-hmm.
And I after a while, it gets old for me. I need my own space.
Yeah.
But I've read the blogs from some of the people who've been there. I've listened to what they have to say about India and what there is to see and how wonderful a trip it's been.
Mm-hmm.
And frankly, and the Kennedys have just advised me that they've signed up for it next year.
So all of a sudden, you might be in India.
Intriguing.
Well, I would love for you to do that one because then we could have India to talk about.
How long did it take them to do that, or this year?
About 6 weeks.
Okay.
But they started at the Taj Mahal and went south.
Okay.
So they just went to the bottom of India. They didn't go the whole country.
How many miles a day are they cranking off, you think?
It looks to me like, from what I'm reading, they're probably doing about 60 to 70 a day.
Mm-hmm.
But again, it's not all on a paved road going...
Right, yeah.
Some of it's probably pretty difficult.
Do you ride a road and a mountain bike or a hybrid bike? What do you do?
When I did Africa, I sort of took a full-on mountain bike mm-hmm. and tried to modify it back toward a road bike. It worked okay. I wasn't that pleased with it.
Mm-hmm.
So when I did Asia, what I did was I went to the local bike shop and we took a cross frame
mm-hmm.
and we modified it to be sort of a road bike with mountain bike characteristics.
Okay.
So I could run wider tires and wheels.
Yeah.
And so forth. And it worked as well as any bike could work.
Cool.
Yeah. I mean, you know, I've seen people try. There was that guy who actually attempted to ride a road bike through Africa. It was interesting to watch.
How long did that last?
I think he made it about 2 days before he was starting to repair that thing.
Yeah, I bet.
I mean, but this bike, it's sturdy. It's got a little wider tires so I can go in some places that you can't go on a road bike. And it's geared so that you can go places you can't go on a road bike. And so it's turned out to be a really good bike.
Cool.
And I took it to South America as well.
Okay, great. Well, I've been recalibrated today. You know, I'm thinking, I'm 51. I need to get on my bike and ride. I've only got 20 minutes to do it. which is a little joke between Marley and
me. Only 20 minutes to get ready for Australia.
Getting on with your life, right? Well, we've been talking with Chuck Giles and Marley Bisbee, and Chuck has trekked across 6 different continents on his bicycle, and all at 50+. And it's been an inspiring show about physical activity at any age, even 50, 60, and now Chuck's 71 years old, and he's thinking of other things to do. So it's never over until it's over, and I hope you guys listening today will get something out of this and do something. You know, that's the thing with Lean Berets. We want everybody to move and be part of the solution, especially in America, for us digging out of the healthcare crisis and fighting back with fitness. So appreciate you listening today. And until next time, stay fit. You've been listening to the Lean Berets radio show at theleanberets.com. Supercharged rockabilly today provided by Hot Rod Walt and the Psycho DeVilles from Atlanta. Until next time, keep your foot on the accelerator for health and rock on. Rock.